Cross-Section USA with Dwight Cook. CBS and its affiliated stations present another cross-country visit with our neighbors as a group of the USA's largest national organizations join CBS for these weekly reports. And every Saturday at the same time, spokesmen for millions of our neighbors in farming, labor, and business bring us their recommendations for action on the urgent issues which will shape our jobs and our future security. Cross-Section USA with Dwight Cook.
Good afternoon. From here in New York today, I'm starting the first of three cross-sections of the USA on the social legislation now before Congress. We'll get recommendations of millions of our neighbors on health and on housing in the next 2 weeks. But today we're concentrating on this question. Should Congress pass the Federal Aid to Education Bill? President Truman insists it should, and he's been urging action ever since his first message to Congress this year. The Senate listened to him and passed the Taft-sponsored bill. But the House has buried it in committee, and just last Wednesday, Mr. Truman sent a special letter to the House urging it to pass the bill before Congress adjourns. Now, here's what that bill would provide. It's a federal subsidy for local school systems. It would cost about $300 million a year, it's estimated. And it would set up a national minimum amount of money to be spent on every school child in the country. The Senate bill sets this figure at about $50 a year. Actually, the national average per school child is more than twice that, about $125. But many schools are now spending as little as $20 a year, especially in the South. So the Federal Aid to Education bill would give the states, as outright gifts, enough money so that every child would have at least $50 spent on him each year, and it would cost us all about $300 million a year, it's estimated. What do you think of the idea? Is it wise and necessary for the federal government thus to step into the local picture on education? Would it mean sooner or later, then, federal control of the schools? Or can the states do an adequate job without federal funds? Well, there are plenty of questions for our guests to answer, so let's go get going on our first informal and ad lib reply to those questions. We'll go south to Richmond, Virginia, to hear from the official spokesman of the USA's largest group of our neighbors in business, the Chamber of Commerce. Scott Jarrett of WRVA is ready to start his interview, so let's go to Richmond. Okay, Scott.
All right, Dwight, we're ready here with the first slice of cross-section. Mr. Thomas C. Bushall, member of the Committee on Education of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, is here with me. He's also president of the Bank of Virginia. Mr. Bushall, as a banker, I'd like to ask you first how this proposition stacks up, in your opinion, in terms of dollars and cents.
Well, Scott, $300 million is a lot of money in anybody's language.
It certainly is.
But what we need is not $300 million from the federal Congress. We need $3 billion from the 48 states and the 3,008 counties and 100,000 local school divisions of this country.
Well, $300 million is a lot of money, and it certainly is. $3 billion is certainly a lot more. You think, then, that that is actually needed. If $300 million is inadequate, why do you think that such a small amount is being appropriated by the federal government?
Well, frankly, I think that's about all that the sponsors of the bill feel they could get out of Congress at this session.
Why is that, sir?
Well, we are burdened with a great federal debt. We are about to break out of our budget. We've got a defense program, and $300 million is about all that they can get in without running over the top.
All right, sir. Well, then, if the budget is that big, do you think that the taxpayers in the state and the county and the cities are able to double the amount spent for education without federal aid?
Well, let's go back to 1940. We were enjoying an $80 billion national income.
$80
billion? $80
billion. All right, sir.
We spent $2.5 billion of that on education, or 3.25%. Now, if we would spend 3.25% of 1948's $210 billion national income, we would have not $2.5 billion, but $6,825,000,000 to spend on education.
That's about double what we spent in 1940.
Well, it's a little more than double what we spent in 1940. But our income has more than doubled since then, too.
Well, how about our expenses? They're about double, too, aren't they?
Well, our expenses are double, too, and so the expenses of the school system have doubled.
All right, sir. All right, then if you recommend doubling about what we spent in 1940, Would you also recommend doubling teachers' salaries?
Well, the teachers' salaries have already been increased to some extent, and we are spending about $3 billion in this country this year. But what we need is not only to increase the teachers' salaries, but we are way behind in school equipment.
All right, sir. Would you care to comment on President Truman's statement? He said that without this federal grant of $300 million, the American educational system is in danger of collapsing.
Well,
what do you say to that?
Don't misunderstand me, Scott, but this is an election year. Our friends in Washington are too often given to frightening us with a collapse theory. There's no danger of education collapsing in this country. That would be a great reflection on the grand teaching profession we have.
You don't think there is that danger of collapse, but do you think there's a crisis?
There is a crisis because we are not spending enough to give an adequate education to our children in this country.
Well, do you really object to accepting, say, $2-3 million here in Virginia from the United States government? I mean, the states don't have to accept it, do they? They can turn it down.
Oh, they can turn it down, but can you imagine a state turning down $3-4 extra million if somebody else was going to get their share? We would always want ours.
Well, if we got $3 million or so from the federal government, that'd be $3 million less we'd have to raise here, right?
Well, the trouble with that is that if we get any grant of any size from the federal government, our legislators and local authorities have to say, well, let Uncle Sam do it and quit on the job when we badly need that amount of money.
Oh, I see. Then we'll have to sort of sell the idea to the local people. Is that your
we've
plan?
We've got to sell the idea to the local people that we've got to have more money for better education in this and every other state.
Well, now, speaking of states, there are some states, and I expect that we'd just better come right out and face it, they're in the South, that the educational facilities are substandard. Is that agreed, sir?
There's no question about it. All throughout the South,
The
facilities are substandard, and we must raise them.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to do it on an evolutionary basis at our own expense and not throw all our problems on Capitol Hill.
And even in the substandard states, you think then that the people are able to raise their taxes as far as education is concerned?
Well, they've always built good roads and beautiful capital buildings and met all the other needs that they have, and they can meet the need for education if they are educated to do so.
All right, sir. Well, I think that clears it up just about as much as we can here from Richmond, Dwight. This has been Mr. Thomas C. Bushall. He's on the Committee on Education for the United States Chamber of Commerce. He's also a banker, as probably our comments indicated, talking about money this way. Thank you very much, Mr. Bushall. And that completes the Chamber of Commerce report from Richmond.
All right, there was point one on this survey of the USA on the question of whether or not Congress should pass federal aid to education before it adjourns. Down in Richmond, Mr. Bushall said that there was a crisis in education. We needed an awful lot more money. In fact, we need $3 billion, but we ought to collect it from local sources, and they better get more responsible and begin spending that money. Now let's go on to the Middle West and hear from another group of our organized neighbors, the largest group of labor unions in the USA, the American Federation of Labor, with its more than 7 million members, I think. Their official spokeswoman will be a member of the American Federation of Teachers, and she's waiting with Julian Bentley of WBBM. So let's jump out to Chicago. All right, Julian.
Thank you, Dwight. Ladies and gentlemen, here in Chicago, we have a guest extremely well qualified to speak on this vital problem of education. She is Mrs. Florence Grieve, who has been a high school teacher for 25 years. Mrs. Grieve is a teacher of economics and government at Lew Wallace High School in Gary, Indiana. At the moment, she's on leave from her school in order to serve as research director for the American Federation of Teachers. She will present the official views of the Teachers Federation and of the American Federation of Labor on this federal aid to education bill. Mrs. Grieve, you have heard the viewpoint of the Chamber of Commerce as expressed by Mr. Bushall. Are you inclined to agree with him?
Mr. Bentley, the American Federation of Labor and the American Federation of Teachers couldn't go along with Mr. Bushall entirely in thinking that the local governments could, even if they would, meet this crisis. There's such a tremendous difference in the wealth of New York and Mississippi, for example. Senator George Aiken of Vermont points out that if Mississippi brought its school expenditures up to the New York level, the tax on real estate would be so high as to constitute confiscation.
Real estate taxes are the main source of educational funds?
Yes, real estate is the main source of school revenue in essentially rural states. The same condition prevails in many states outside the industrial areas in this country. Many states, too, have statutory limitations on tax levies that cannot be erased overnight, regardless of the need. The interesting part of it all, Mr. Bentley, is that the states with the least wealth have the most children. So the major part of federal aid would go to the southern states.
Yes, Mr. Bushall indicated that condition obtaining in the South.
The program at best sets up a minimum standard of education for all children in the United States. The Chamber of Commerce is interested in wealth, and so are we, because we believe that one of our greatest national assets lies in the nation's children, who, given educational opportunities, will contribute their full share to the nation's wealth. Denied them, they become a liability, as our delinquency bill vouches for. Year after year, the American Federation of Labor has urgently requested the passage of a federal aid to education bill. We believe it will bring in big dividends. Meanwhile, business has opposed it because of a slight increase in taxes. After all, the millions of organized laborers will pay their full share of this program.
Well, that is a rather contrasting viewpoint, Mrs. Grieve. Now, do you think that we need federal aid to the schools in the amount suggested in the present bill? Although Mr. Bushall said $3 billion, he wasn't, I think, talking about federal funds. Do you think we need that much?
Mr. Bentley, in 1945, we spent $55 per capita for liquor, $21 per capita for tobacco, $17.75 per capita for beauty aids and barbershop.
Well, how much for education?
It just happens that the $17.75 for beauty aids was duplicated for all elementary and secondary schools. A nation that can spend that much for luxuries can well afford to spend a third as much for education.
Well, certainly those are impressive, not to say shocking figures. Now, we've all been hearing considerable discussion of the question whether any of this federal aid money should go to private and parochial schools. Will you tell us, Mrs. Grieve, how the Teachers Federation and the AFL feel about that rather touchy point?
Well, Mr. Bentley, both the American Federation of Teachers and the American Federation of Labor hold with the traditional separation of church and state. We would not agree, however, to have federal funds spent for salaries for teachers who teach religion, but the services to children, we believe, should be for all children.
Now, excuse me, Mrs. Grieve, you say services. Would you define that word in this connection?
Yes. By services, we mean health services, recreation services, books, lunches, and other services. The question of transportation is, in the opinion of the American Federation of Teachers, debatable.
Now, by that, do you mean the possibility of using public monies for transporting children in free buses to schools, both private and parochial, as well as public?
By that, I mean that the stand that the American Federation of Teachers has taken is that public funds for transportation should be for children going to the public schools only.
That was the viewpoint of the Federation of Teachers or the AFL?
The AFL hasn't taken a stand on that, but the American Federation of Teachers took that stand at their convention in Boston in August of last year.
They were opposed to using public buses. Well, it will be interesting to see how the AFL, the Federation itself, decides on that eventually. Friends, you've been listening to Mrs. Florence Grieve, the research director for the American Federation of Teachers, and who is on leave from her high school duties at Lew Wallace High School, Gary, Indiana. Thank you, Mrs. Grieve, for your interesting contribution to Cross Section. All right, Dwight, there you have the AFL's point of view.
Well, it might be interesting to add at this point that all the other prominent labor groups go along with the AFL's position on federal aid to education, both the Congress of Industrial Organization and, so far as I know, all the independent labor unions believe that we should pass that legislation now. In terms of a point which Mrs. Grieve brought up, which perhaps will be commented on later in the program, this question of federal aid being used for parochial schools, I believe the bill states are in effect, to put it in a slang phrase, I believe the bill passes the buck right back to the states and says, all right, here's the money to spend on the pupils. The extent to which you spend it and allot it to parochial schools as well as public schools is up to you and not up to us. I hope if I'm wrong there, The guests who are coming along will correct me. In fact, I'm fairly sure they will. But now let's go back south for another argument against federal aid. And we'll go to North Carolina this time. I believe that's a state which would get more aid under the bill than any other state. And we'll hear this time from the official spokesman of the National Economic Council. Dr. George Cutton is himself a former college president, as well as a director of the NEC. And Frank Jarman, the manager of WDNC down in Durham, North Carolina, is going to ask him questions. So let's go south again. Take it, Frank.
Yes, Dwight, and you failed to mention that our speaker here this evening is a native of Nova Scotia. Dr. George B. Cutton served as president of Colgate University from 1922 to 1942, and then he chose to come south for retirement at Chapel Hill, and that's the home of the University of North Carolina. As you said, Dr. Cutting is now a director of the National Economic Council, and point blank right here, I want to ask Dr. Cutting, are you in favor of the federal aid for education bill?
Mr. Jarman, I'm not in favor of the bill for federal aid to education for two or three very important reasons. One is because I'm so much interested in education and having it of the best possible quality. As a matter of fact, there's no such thing as federal aid. The federal government has no money. It's your money and mine that they're spending, and not of their own. It's how they shall redirect the money that they've taken away from us, not their federal aid. But more especially this, that the Constitution has given Congress absolutely nothing to do with education. They practically said, hands off.
You said a moment ago that you were interested in better education, and from all I can find out about the federal aid for education bill, well, it's supposed to bring about better education.
Well, better education is the education that is controlled by the local authorities and fits local needs and is brought up as our education has been from the hearts and sacrifices and plans of the people in the local community.
Well, I judge from that, Dr. Cutton, that you think that it isn't possible to have federal aid without having federal control.
Congress is facing a dilemma. The dilemma is this. They have no right to grant any money for any purposes without controlling it. And on the other hand, if they do control it, why, that does away with free education. All the bills proposed up to the present time have had controls in them. And it seems impossible that the Congress can have a bill come before it without certain controls. And those who pay the piper always call the tune.
Let me stop you here for just a moment. I want you to answer a question here for me that was brought out in what Dr. Bouchard said a moment ago, rather Mr. Bouchard. He said that he doesn't think that the states would turn down any federal aid. What do you think about that? Do you think any of them would? Or have they asked for it?
The states have not a state in the Union has asked for any federal aid. They're not paupers, these states. If I had thought that North Carolina was a pauper state, I'd never set my foot inside of it. Of course. As a matter of fact, the states are in better financial condition than the federal government is. During the war, the states paid off their debts, while the federal government built up the astronomical debt that we're facing at the present time there.
Well, Mrs. Greaves said a moment ago that the states could not meet this emergency.
The states, I think what she said was that it would take some time for them to change their legislation so they could meet the emergency. I don't think there's any idea that the states couldn't meet the emergency if they wanted to do so.
Some of our speakers today, and also Dwight mentioned it at the opening of this program, that President Truman had told Speaker, House Speaker Joseph Martin, Jr. several days ago in a letter that unless Congress provided federal aid for education, the American system for education faces the danger of a serious breakdown. Now, do you think that the president has been ill-informed on this subject?
I don't think he's ill-informed. I think he has his mind on November. And if he could have the support and the influence of the teachers throughout the United States, why, he would not be facing the disastrous prognostications that people are making concerning his election in November.
Well, now let's get to another question. Mr. Bouchard and Mrs. Grieve both brought out the fact that some states have better educational systems than others. Isn't it true that federal aid for education would give all states a good educational system at a level?
That is not necessarily so. They will always be unequal. There's no doubt about that. You can't have absolute equality in connection with education, nor should you have. The needs of states are different as far as education is concerned. You can't have one pattern that goes out from Washington that's going to fit all the local conditions, any more than we had one pattern of charity 15 years ago that fitted all the conditions then.
Just one other question right quickly. I can see that your feelings are that federal aid would mean that we're kind of getting away from the town meeting idea. How do you think this would affect democracy?
The further we get away from the town meeting, the less democracy we have. Anything that can possibly be handled by the town should be. And what can't be should be handled by the counties and then the states, and only as a last resort should be handled by the federal government.
Well, thank you, Dr. Cutton. Well, that's the way Dr. George B. Cutton, a former Colgate University president and at present a director of the National Economic Council, feels about the federal aid for education bill. So that's all from Durham, Dwight.
Well, Dr. Cutton has brought another issue sharply to the front concerned with this federal aid to education, and that's a fear on the part of many people who are against it, and whether or not if the federal government gives money to separate states, sooner or later it doesn't mean that the federal government dictates what shall be done with that money. In other words, he who controls the purse strings controls what's done with the money. That's a question Dr. Cutton has raised. I think our next guest will want to deal with it, too, as we go all the way out the Pacific coast to hear what farmers have to say. We hear from the official spokesman for the USA's largest organization of farmers, the American Farm Bureau Federation. Incidentally, all the top groups in farming as well as in labor are in favor of this aid to education bill, including the National Grange and the National Farmers Union. But now, Stuart Novins, the special events director of KNX in Los Angeles, is the interviewer as usual. So give us 5 seconds to throw a lot of switches, in fact, all that the engineers can get their hands on, and we'll have you out in Los Angeles with Stuart Novins.
Well, Dwight, those switches must have been right, because here we are in Los Angeles with Mr. Clyde Huber, who is vice president of the California Farm Bureau Federation. Mr. Huber, you've heard the opinions of the other guests on our cross-section. How do you feel about federal aid? Do you think there's a need for it?
I think unquestionably there is a need for some assistance in the matter of education. As long ago as 1943, the American Farm Bureau Federation, in looking to the future, post-war planning, expressed itself in favor of equal opportunity, of expanding the opportunity for education for our youth of the United States.
Well, now, the gentleman who preceded us, Dr. Cutton, seems to feel that there is no necessity for establishing a uniformity. How do you feel about that?
I think there's no need to establish a uniformity. I think we must keep away from uniformity in education.
Well, by uniformity, do you refer to school buildings and school textbooks, or are you referring to the amount of money to be spent?
I would refer to both. I think the buildings and facilities should be adaptable to the communities in which they're used. I think the instruction should be in line with the ideas that they have in the local communities.
Well, now, Mr. Huber, what makes you feel that the federal government should do it? Why can't it be done on the state or local level? That was a question raised by Mr. Bushall and Mrs. Grieve. How do you feel about it?
As has been pointed out by those two speakers, the source of income for education rests on property taxes. That limits very materially and drastically the amount of money that we can spend on that. And in all our financing of public matters, we're searching for and reappraising and getting new avenues of revenue, and we need to do that. We need to use some of that in education as well as building highways and other things.
In other words, you feel that in those areas where there is not enough taxable property, there is not enough educational opportunity. Is that right?
I think that quite often follows, yes.
Well, now, Mr. Huber, as I understand it, the Farm Bureau Federation has always been in favor of emphasizing the state and the local levels of government rather than the national. How does that square with your stand now in favor of federal aid to education?
Your statement is correct. Speaking as a farmer, were we directed from Washington when to sow and when to reap, it wouldn't be long until the American people would find themselves in want of bread. Applying this philosophy to matters of education, I think we insist that there be local control, even though the federal government does give some financial assistance. The strength of our democracy and our way of life, in my opinion, is occasioned by the variety and diversity of the opinions we hold, and that rises from the type of education that we've had and the diversity of our education.
Well, now that opens a new field for questions, Mr. Huber. There was a suggestion recently from some of the states to establish regional educational institutions for segregated groups. Would you use federal funds for such groups?
I think federal funds should not be used for establishing or maintaining segregated institutions of any kind.
How do you feel about the use of federal funds for private or parochial schools?
I think the same principle applies in that case.
Would you use any of the funds for adult education, Mr. Huber?
I would not at this time. I would concentrate entirely on the educational opportunities for our youth. If and when that is met, and the need for expansion to adults needs, we can then develop a program.
Well, now, what about research foundations or actual physical buildings for schools? Would you use any of this money, the $300 million that the Farm Bureau Federation supports? Would you use it for those purposes?
This fund should be used and distributed where the need makes it necessary. If it should be necessary to spend some for providing a place for a school to be held, that might be possible.
But basically, you feel it should
basically,
be for...
Basically, it should go for books and things of that sort.
One more question, Mr. Huber. You mentioned that aid should go where the need is greatest. How would you guarantee the use of such funds?
We would have to depend entirely on the integrity of our local and state administrators of this money. But it should be in their control, not in the federal control.
Now, suppose we found a local community or a state that did not use the money where the need was greatest. Would you withdraw federal funds?
I think that should be withdrawn.
Suppose the money were not used for rural areas, would you support the bill just as strongly as you do now?
This bill, the money spent on the basis of need, it should be, it will be, large amounts of it spent in rural areas. Should there be found a need in an urban district, I think it should go and be spent where that need exists.
Well, Dwight, there you've heard how Mr. Clyde Huber, Vice President of the California Farm Bureau Federation, expresses the views of his organization. And now let's throw those same switches that you were talking about a few moments ago back in the other direction, Dwight, and we'll join you in New York.
I made a slight error when I shipped us out of coast a couple of minutes ago. I forgot we had special and extremely expensive lines to avoid keeping you waiting those 5 seconds. So I promised you a wait, which didn't occur. I hope you were as pleasantly surprised as I was. Coming back to the subject we've all discussed this afternoon, and our friends discussed it in frank ad-lib remarks, which are not easy for anybody concerned, but it is a way of attempting to get out to all of us what they want to say. The first point which was brought up was the question of whether Mr. Truman brought the whole question of federal aid up as an election issue. The people against it think he did. The people for federal education, as I heard it, had nothing to say one way or the other. That's something we'll leave for you to go on from there on. The second point and the central point that seemed to get involved here was whose business is it to decide what money is spent how for the education of children within a given state? Is it up to the people in that state or locality, or is it up to the federal government to come in if the federal government or the rest of us not in that state feel the state is not doing enough for its children to come in and say, here is some money, bring it up to what we think you should spend on it? There is a question that a lot of chewing can be done over. But it was encouraging to hear two sets of agreements from opposite sides here. On the one hand, you notice the people for federal aid were still in favor of local control. They thought it would be very bad if you had federal control. And on the other hand, you remember Mr. Bouchard at the beginning of the program was very much in favor of a great deal of money being spent now for education. They all feel there is a crisis which needs solving by all of us. Next week, we're going on to the second of these programs on social legislation and take up the question of federal housing, the Taft-Eleanor Wagner bill, and whether that should be passed. And the week after that, we're going on in a health situation. I hope you'll want to come back and hear those discussions. Until then, good afternoon.
Listen in again at the same time next Saturday when Dwight Cook takes you on another cross-section of the USA with official spokesmen of the country's largest national organizations in business and labor and farming. This is CBS, where 99 million people gather every week, the Columbia Broadcasting System.